everybody. Welcome. My name is Juliana. And because today is Mother's Day, I have invited a couple of other mothers whom I love very much to talk to us today. So thank you for joining us for today's conversation. So the first thing I'd love for us to do is if we could introduce ourselves, tell me your name and talk a little bit about your families.
I'll start. I'm Elaine, and I'm married to Al. We've been married almost 25 years this year. We'll be married 25 years. I have two kids. Harrison, he's 23. Actually, I have three. One's by marriage, so he's married to his lovely wife, Alyssa, and they have a beautiful granddaughter, my granddaughter. She's about 6 months old, named Henley, and the love of our lives. She's yummy. And then I have a daughter, Kat, who is a barista at Starbucks, so highly caffeinated, but is my connection to all things Starbucks and awesome. And she'll be 21 very soon.
Yes.
Awesome. And I'm Liz, and I'm married to Ken, and we have a blended family. So we have a basketball team of five kids, and they are ages 25 all the way through 17 at the moment. So many things, so many people, and a grandchild that will be three this coming June.
That's awesome. Yeah, my name's Jen. I'm married to Mitchell for almost 15 years this year, which is crazy. We have four girls, which I want to mention. They're all girls. For this conversation that's about to happen, you should all keep in mind I have four girls. That's right. Just kidding. They're awesome. Sloan is in middle school, so she is 12. Micah is 10. Quinn is almost 9. And Evie is 7. As I hesitate, it's just to make sure I have all the ages right.
You did good because I didn't attempt.
Thank you. I'm serious. I call the pediatrician's office, like making an appointment for so-and-so. When's their birthday? What year were they born? And I had to go through the, like, hold on 1 second and figure it out. Okay. 2012. Yeah. You know, like whatever it is.
Yep. Math reasons.
Like, is it?
Yes.
I don't even know if that's one of my years my kids were born. I don't think it is, but you know, you have to figure out which one it was.
We're off to a great start. Well, great. I'm Juliana. I am very excited to be talking to you guys because I have two kids. I'm married to my husband, Juan Carlos, and our son is 11 and our daughter is 10. And I might be wrong. I can't remember all of a sudden because I was put on the spot for math reasons. Well, I would love it if we could start off our conversation talking about the thing that all moms have, which is the picture of perfect motherhood, what the perfect mom is supposed to look like. Why is it that we all have that picture, and why is it that that is such a big struggle for us?
That is right.
Right off the bat.
I started it like, who is the perfect mom? Which one is it? Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I would say the first thing is that I look at my mom, right? And I wanted to do things like her, but different than her. And then as I became a mom myself, I was an automatic stepmom because we have this blended family. So I'm comparing myself to my mom. Comparing myself to other moms that are peeking in and making sure that I'm being responsible and not only raising their children the way that they want their children to be raised, but also making this mix that is compatible with all the kids. So it was a lot of going back and forth and double guessing and like trying to make up for things. Comparison is a huge thing. Yeah.
I think for me, starting out as a young mom, you know, the question, why do we want to be the perfect mom? I was 22 and I had Sloan, so we were very young, but Mitchell and I knew we wanted a lot of kids. We were both from one of four, so loved that big family aspect. So it's like, okay, if we're going to have this many kids, should we have them early? Okay, sure. So see what happens. But 22.
See what happens.
It's like rolling the dice.
Yeah. Honestly, you know.
See when they keep coming.
I know. They don't stop.
Once you start, they don't stop.
Oh, well. And so for me, knowing I wanted to be a mom, the strive for perfection just lives in women in general, right? Let's just call that. But feeling like motherhood was supposed to be natural instincts. at 22, there is nothing natural in you about knowing how to raise a human. You know, and there, it's like 24 hours. You're going home from the hospital with a baby. That was really hard for me, realizing, okay, not everything comes natural. Survival comes natural. So you do whatever you take to keep yourself and this human alive. But learning that motherhood was not a natural thing always. So striving to be perfection, it was really challenging because I thought it was supposed to be easy. I thought it was supposed to come natural, and it didn't.
I'd love to come back to that. Anything else about perfect motherhood?
I don't have to guess who the perfect. I knew the perfect mom. She was.
Was she you?
No, it's not in the mirror. I don't look in the mirror and see the perfect mom. But when my son was in elementary school, she and I, our children were in the same school, same class, and she was the room mother, and she lived in my neighborhood. So bonus, I got her on both ends of that, at school and in the neighborhood. She made all the kids, all of her children's Halloween outfits. They were perfect. Any class project was perfect. When I, you know, had to come and bring a snack for the kids, it was something store-bought, like cookies, like Chip Ahoy's or something. She brought homemade things that were just Martha Stewart on steroids. It was not even right. And I would just like cringe because it was so obvious I was not her, you know? And she did it looking great. She was a great mom. She, makeup was great. She always looked fine, dressed well. And I was barely doing, like, getting out of pajama bottoms into sweats, you know, to make it up to school. So Prentice was the perfect mom. And I just remember, in fact, to this day, Al will, when I get in that zone of, you know, that lane we run of, like, because you're right, perfection doesn't start with having kids. Perfection starts long before that. Yeah. But he'll be like, hey, you're not Prentice, right? Like, just no, you don't have to be Prentice. Nobody wants you to be, like, you are not Prentice. And it would just like, oh yeah, you're right. I might be, okay, I can just, okay, I'll just take it down a gear. So having known the perfect mom, I got some great advice though. I think when I was a newlywed, Al and I met with this couple, and I remember we were just struggling with how to keep the house clean. I liked it at 100%, Al liked it 60% was good with him. And she looked at me and said, learn, 90%, 80% is okay. You're not going to be able to do the house at 100% all the time. You're going to add being a parent someday. You're going to have, you know, jobs. You're going to have other things that are going to hinder your ability to do it all. And if you think everything has to be 100%, you're going to make everybody miserable around you, and you'll be miserable. So she gave me the freedom to decide 80% was good. 70% can be good, right? So to take myself off the hook for that, and I can live comfortably at 50% now. I mean, it's great. I have managed to let the bar be so low.
Okay, let's talk about
that,
the bar.
You know,
expectations.
I mean, where is the bar anyway?
That is great. Listen, when you talked about sewing Halloween costumes, it reminds me, like, my kids, a button will fall off. I mean, I feel like that's pretty easy. They put those sewing kits in a hotel room, right? Because anyone can do it. No, my kids are like, it's okay, Mom. Aunt Mandy can sew that. And I'm like, I can put on a button. They're like, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Aunt Mandy can.
Well, it's almost like a little bit of a pride thing, too. You know, having teens, I wanted to be that cool mom. You know, all of their friends come over. I'm cooking the best meals. I'm doing, having the party, you know. So just got to be careful with, like, what you're looking at in the mirror. And, yeah.
I'd also think social media is probably not helpful. You know, I don't get to do social media a lot, but when I do, I notice that everybody does seem to look perfect, and it's all the highlight reel of everything. And so it's probably best that I don't stay on there a whole lot, but you do see people at their best, and you look around and all of a sudden you don't feel so great about, like, your surroundings anymore. You know, it's like, ooh, I could probably ramp this up a little bit. You know, I could probably shore it up and clean something, you know, or.
Well, guys, it looks like 70% is good enough and that. The bar.
Yeah. Yes.
Someone taking notes, because I need that.
One of the things that we hear about all the time is the importance of, as moms, taking care of ourselves. Making taking care of ourselves a priority. Why is that so hard for us? Why? I know I feel guilty if I do. Why is that the normal response from other moms?
Self-care as a mom is super hard. I know for me, as soon as a human entered my life, I forgot that I was supposed to take care of myself, to be honest. The list of needs in a household, I mean, it's constant. And so, and the top of that list is, like, my name. And so there's this running list in my head always of what needs to happen, who needs what done, all of these kind of things. And the idea of self-care, it didn't even cross my mind for the first probably 5 years of being a mom. And so it just took some prioritizing. It took practicing self-care. So for me, it was going outside for a run by myself, not pushing a stroller, which, you know, sometimes it's like divide and conquer. If you've got multiple kids, you take a few and I'll take one on a run. Nope. By yourself for an hour. That was my outlet when they were younger. But why is it so hard? Because it just at times it just felt selfish. And that's not true. It's like, that's the trick, is that it's not selfish. In fact, it's, you need that time by yourself just to be able to give more time to that running list of needs that will never end, you know?
Yeah, I remember when the kids were small, just putting 30 minutes on my calendar to shower. That was self-care, you know? Pretend spa, you know, for the 30 minutes. But I think it's such a priority and so important, because we're filling our calendars and things every second with all of this stuff. And then at the end of the day, we're depleted. We have absolutely nothing else to give. And tomorrow looks the same like it did today. Mm-hmm. So you have to release that pressure. You have to let it go. Yeah, you got to let it go. There's an Instant Pot. It has like that release pressure. Yes. And then you have to get to that moment every single day.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not going to be good the next day.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure to have built up if you don't relieve it, for sure.
You're right.
I like what you're saying, put it on the calendar.
Put it on the calendar.
Yeah, that is smart. That's smart. Liz is smart.
I try.
I think it's hard because you succeed. At least that's what you tell me. No, I'm just kidding. Don't tell me that. I think it's hard. Jen hit on it. We feel guilt. Mom guilt is real. It is a real thing. We don't need anybody to put it on us. We carry it well all by ourselves. We're like a pack mule with it. I think that I thought the idea of not enjoying my kids all the time, I felt like that was somehow wrong to being female or a mom. Like, you're supposed to love your kids all the time. But sometimes I honestly didn't enjoy being around them. I was done. My margin was done. I was tired. They didn't seem to understand that mommy needed a break or something. Kids don't really understand that all the time. And I can remember times where Al would literally put me out on the front step and close the door behind me. And he'd say, I suggest you go for a run and you can come back in an hour, you know, because he knew if I hit the road and ran for about an hour, by the time I got back, those endorphins would have kicked in. I'm going to be okay. I'll be a little recharged and refueled. I'll be in a better state of mind to reengage with the kids. The other thing he would do is say to the kids when he knew, and he always knew when I was at the end, because he felt a little of that pressure valve. I would, in his direction.
Most people can feel it before we admit
yes,
it.
Yes, they really can. He would say, you know what? You're off duty the rest of the night. Like, when we get home, the kids are not allowed to say, Mom. They will come to me. You are allowed to go to your room. I don't care what you do. Take a nap, read a book, sit and stare blankly at a wall. I don't care. Drool if you need to, whatever it may be. But he was like, you're done for the rest of the night. So I just remember those times that he got it before I did, but it was tremendous guilt. I had a mom too, that, I don't know, when we were growing up, I know she loved us, but I never felt like she was engaged with us. She spent a lot of time on the sofa, sleeping, just never seemed really happy, and never hands-on. And so I felt like if I were to take time away from my kids, the way I felt like my mom detached from us, which is what it meant to me, I'm detaching from them, I'm not with them, they're going to think I don't want to be invested in them. To me, that's what it meant, was to take time away. I'm going to make them think the same things I felt from my mom. I love my mom. I think she did the best she could. But she was grappling with things that made it hard for her to engage with us. And I did not want to pass that on to my kids. So that was hard.
Yeah, you touched on it. How do you feel that self-care, that healthy self-care, has made you a better mom, releasing the pressure valve?
Well, I'm more energetic and I have more to give. Mm-hmm. So I remember being 26, Ken was working a second shift. I would pick up the kids after work. do all of the things, the homework, the dinner, the bath time, the putting to bed. And by the time he came home, I had nothing left. And so that's when I hit a wall and I was like, I have to create space and I have to create something that's just for me, because I didn't want to disengage. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to disengage with myself or the family unit, because there's you do disengage with yourself.
Yep. Yeah.
And you forget to dream and you forget to, like, who's that person before the momness came in, you know? Yeah. So I go back to, like, prioritizing and calendaring it in.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend suggest some things to me about that calendar, which makes me think, Elaine, I mean, if we got self-care to a 70%, okay, let's put it at 50%. At 50%, what would our homes look like?
That's so good. It's kind of like the whole, the oxygen mask, that you have to put the oxygen mask on as a mom first before you can tend to the littles and the other humans in your world. You got to do that.
Gotcha. Yeah. We can't give them breath until we've got our oxygen mask on. So
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Or we're passed out.
Okay. So put your oxygen mask on before you pass out.
That's right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's a great principle.
Ladies, what would you say that we do, or how do we deal with the challenge of developing and maintaining friendships as mothers in our season of motherhood? And is that different over different seasons?
Yeah, I would say it's super important to have friendships. I've always been in some type of community based where there are moms that are going through the same exact stage as I am, but also having friends that are ahead of me so that I can be like, you went through so-and-so, I need some advice, I need some wisdom here. And it's been super helpful, you know, just to have a phone call and be able to vent, you know, with teens. Girl, you're never gonna believe what so-and-so did. Mm-hmm. What should I do? Mm-hmm. And just to balance it out and have someone as a soundboard and being able to be vulnerable. And if I want to cry a little, I can cry. If I want to laugh a little, I can laugh. So it's super important.
I love that. Yeah. So I was raised by a single mom. So I know firsthand how hard raising kids is by yourself. You know, it's probably one of the hardest challenges in life. I would imagine, you know, I watched my mom pull in a community, whether it was my aunts, my uncles, we had a big family, so she pulled in that family and pulled in friends. And I can imagine that is exactly what's needed for all of us, no matter where we found ourselves. But, watching my mom do that, I learned, okay, I'm going to need a community around me. I'm going to need people, specifically when they're tiny. The stories that come to mind and the season that was so special about that and, you know, prioritizing friendships. Just your question around that was, I had a friend in the neighborhood, and again, three and under, so they're all in diapers. Yeah, because a three-year-old, I mean, we're getting to potty train, but still, they're in diapers. It would be like 10 in the morning. So that seems, you know, like your day had just started. No, we had been up for 4 or 5 hours because your kids wake up so early. Yeah. The day starts so soon. So abruptly too, you know, it's like they're awake and you're full speed. But I can remember we would just call or text, and it was so low key, low expectations. And it was one of those things of, hey, what you got in your pantry for lunch? What are y'all doing for lunch? Oh, you've got mac and cheese. You've got peanut butter. Okay. We're coming. We're coming out. Oh, don't clean up anything, 'cause they're just going to pull out all the toys anyway. But I would show up, everyone's still in pajamas, poop all over my shirt, because that's where you are.
Baby's
again,
poop.
three and under, all in diapers.
Yes.
And that season was so special because it just made life a little bit easier. You were doing it with someone in those season, in that season. And I've got several friends that we kind of walk through this, Liz, you touched on this, the same season together. Our kids are still growing up together. And that community, you have to be intentional. You have to pull them in. And you need the help. Yeah. We all need the help.
I'm not sure how many friends I have that I could show up with poop on my shirt for and it'd be okay. But, you know, but I admire that.
Low expectations.
We are your friends now.
Low bar.
50%
Listen,
or
and
less.
Then you raise adaptable kids, right? Yes. Because
they're resilient.
They know to ask their aunt to sew the buttons. They don't even ask you.
Yeah. I would say that I love all of that. I think it's all true. I think it's part of the friendship thing is hard for me personally because I am a laid back. Green is my temperament, one of my temperaments, which means I'm laid back. I'm an introvert by nature. I have to muster up, you know, the, okay, I should probably reach out to humanity and contact somebody and connect. I only need two friends really, and Al's one of them. So I, you know, I need one other slot filled and I'm good, like forever. So I think that you have to know your wiring and temperament. And so for me with friendships, I've had one really good friend that I do the Saturday once or twice a month coffees with and try to meet with her to kind of just download. We may talk about our spouses. We may talk about our kids. It doesn't really matter, you know, but she's that one I can download with. And I think that just knowing that you have somebody to travel with helps make all the difference in the world. And I just think the most important thing for maybe introverts to remember too is that we don't want to do it by ourselves. I think the solo thing is what's scary. So figure out what works for you. Figure out what works for your personality and temperament. And then leverage that to your advantage. Text, Marco Polo, GroupMe, whatever, if you're not a phone person. You know, do whatever you got to do to maintain those relationships.
For the audio, she said I'm not.
No, I am not at all. And that's okay.
Yes.
Low bars.
Yeah.
That's right. So, you know, but just don't do it alone.
Just regardless of the stage, prioritize it. But mothering is not a solo sport.
No.
Now I would really love it if we would talk about how faith has played a part in your being a mom, as a mother. What part has faith played for each of you?
Ooh, that's a big question. Well, I didn't grow up knowing anything about God or going to church, or I always knew that there was something bigger than myself, but once I became a Christian, that changed my entire perspective. It changed my entire life. Ken and I, we knew we wanted to break a cycle of how we were raised up and the things that we saw, where we came from. So when we decided to have our children, you know, believe in Christ and this was going to be our lifestyle, it was going to be something that we were moving into a direction to, again, to break the cycle, it was eye-opening for me. It was something that I was trying to fill with other things in my life, like this void. I didn't know what it was, but once I realized it, it was like, okay, this is what life is supposed to look like. This is what life is supposed to feel like. And so our kids watched us grow in our faith. They watched us get baptized. They watched us, you know, get married. I mean, it was just life-changing for all of us. Yeah.
That's amazing.
For me, faith has really kind of always been in the picture from the start. But probably one of the most challenging things about raising kids and prioritizing faith, it was remembering that my relationship with God was personal. It was all of a sudden that these children entered into my personal relationship with God. And while that is okay, somewhere along the way, I forgot my relationship with God was my own. And so I needed to prioritize that. And really it hit, prioritizing that and the weight of that hit later in life. Mitchell and I, we lost our fifth daughter. And it wasn't until, and it was 4 years ago, to May 18th, 4 years ago. It wasn't until really the darkness hit, until the depths, you know, of despair really hit, that I realized I needed a personal relationship with God. I had these children who were going to watch how I process this grief or process this loss. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, I did that well for them, whatever that looked like. I don't even know that there are rules to that, but it became clear that my relationship with God had to be personal. It had to be a priority, because you know, the weight of the world is coming. Like hard things are going to hit us. And we have children watching, you know, and we're helping. They're just like they watched you and Ken. They're also watching in the hard times. And so prioritizing that, that became evident in that moment that I needed to make sure my relationship with God was a priority. It was something that had to happen, you know?
Yeah. Faith for when that hard thing is,
yeah,
does hit.
Because it will, you know, and that when life is out of control, the thing that we've said this before, the thing that you can control is who you place your hope in. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when there's no hope left, the only thing you have to hold on to is your faith. And so that's what faith is. And so it became real in that moment that, oh yeah, like my relationship with God is personal. Yes, these human beings are watching and they're around and they're part of it and they're in my prayers and they're in my worry for sure. But if I didn't prioritize us, it was going to be challenging later. Yeah.
How was faith in your life?
Yeah, I mean, faith to me, apart from that, I don't know how you do motherhood because I think, you know, it's like your heart goes outside of your body and lives inside of these children and you become so vulnerable to the things that they do. I think surrender comes to mind just with a journey of faith is, I think parenting, being a mom is a journey of surrender. And it starts with, I mean, surrendering the fact that your kids aren't going to be what you thought. Like, I don't know, maybe you don't have dreams for your kids, but I had dreams for what I thought Harrison would be, what I thought Kat would be, and when that would happen, and what that would look like, and how it would feel, and, you know, who they might marry, and things like that. And I just remember, I mean, surrender started as early as, you know, soon after. And you think, gosh, well, that's not going to happen for them, or they're not going to be that way, or they're not going to. And learning how to surrender, and just learning how to surrender it to God, and letting Him write their story. Is a hard thing for me to give up that pen and not write that line. Because I think sometimes I thought I did a better job and I liked my dreams better. And I thought the plot line would have been better had we done it this way. And I didn't always like the way he wrote characters into the story and changed and did plot twist. We suffered a miscarriage. And I remember, I don't know how people, I don't know where you go if you don't, because I was so disappointed. I felt guilt because I wasn't excited about the pregnancy. It was hard for me. Our daughter was going to kindergarten. I was looking forward to, we're out of that stage, and the thought of going back was hard. And then when I miscarried about 10, 11 weeks later, I felt such tremendous guilt. And like, if I had just been happier, if I had just been more excited, maybe this wouldn't have happened. I don't know if you guys go through that kind of stuff that we torture ourselves with,
yeah, right.
But you do. And, you know, just remembering to go, it's okay. He loves me unconditionally. He's not mad at me. He didn't do this to punish me. You know, miscarriages happen. Sin is in the world. And I remember the freedom it felt to be able to move past that. But significantly, my daughter's journey with bipolar and anxiety and suicidal ideation and being hospitalized, I mean, there are just times that you don't have anything left. You just don't have it in you. You don't have it in you to make one more decision. You don't have it in you to even think a spiritual thought because you're just beyond the end of yourself. And I can remember no matter where I got, wherever it was, no matter how low it got, no matter how many times she may have cut herself, no matter how many days it was in the hospital, I can just remember thinking, okay, I don't have it to get through the day, but Jesus, you do. And even though I can't be with her where she is, I don't even know where she is emotionally, you can be with her. And that takes the pressure off me. But having to surrender a daughter who's gonna have a normal journey, you know, but it wasn't a shock to God.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the difference that faith makes, is that I can step back and go, okay, I can't understand it, but it's not confusing to God. Yeah. And if I just hang that's with so him, true. He'll get me through this. So
that's so true.
For people hearing us, they don't know when the bad thing is coming and they want to develop that faith in their lives. What does that look like to prioritize faith as a mom? How do we get on that journey, regardless of where they're starting from?
I think it's part of self-care. Like, you have to prioritize it, whether it's
waking up in the morning and that's the first thing you do, or the last thing you do at night, you know, just talking to God himself and asking for that strength that you don't have, that you know you need to get only from him. Because God, we're important to him. Mm-hmm. He has to be important to us.
I love everything you guys have already said. I think what I would add is, how to develop it. It has to start with a relationship with God. You know, it has to start with a relationship, you and God together in this, mm-hmm. you know, and no matter what happens, no matter what lies in front of you that you're going to trust. You know, I talked about surrender. You can't really, it's hard to surrender to someone you don't trust and believe that he is good. And I think, you know, just from my story, but also what comes to mind is those who are struggling, who want so badly to be moms and they can't, and they keep trying, but every time their hope feels dashed, like you said, your hope is what's left and where do you put it, right? And I think it has to come, you know, trusting God, that you can still put your faith and your hope in him. He is trustworthy. You can trust him. If it's your first, second, or third like time that you've tried and your hope is gone, he still can sustain you through that. And I think that's what it has to rely upon for those to-be moms who want so badly nothing more. And this day is hard for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, they don't even want to watch this because right. it's hard for them. That is what I would want them to know, is you can trust God, especially in the hardest places, you know, where you're least likely to. You must. It's a relationship. You got to trust him.
Yeah.
And talk to him all the time.
Bring just him being all of that pain
yeah.
to him.
Yeah.
All of it.
Praying
every
constantly.
Ounce of it.
Yeah. Even, I don't know, this values a prayer, but I'm like, Lord, please help me not to kill this child today or hurt this child.
It's real.
So prioritize your faith, yeah. even if it just means don't let me kill the children.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not really, though.
Well, to wrap up, I'd love it if we could all share some of the best advice that we've gotten about being a mom and that we'd like to pass on to everybody else.
Okay. For me, it's okay to apologize. In fact, you should apologize probably every day to your kids in some fashion. Model that. You know, we're not going to be perfect. We're going to lose our cool. How many times have we put our kids to bed wishing we could go wake them up and say, it's fine, I'm sorry, you know? Mm-hmm. You're like, well, you're wishing for bedtime, and then you like, no, I want to wake them up now and see them. For me, it's okay to apologize.
That's a really good one.
That is really good, because I have some older children, and they like to come in the middle of the night and talk about everything, and I'm like, at this point right now, I'm just trying to go to bed, but it's okay. So this is nothing that I have, like, dreamt up of, or it's something I've learned over time, that the relationships with my kids are way more important than the dishes.
Yes.
So I'll stop what I'm doing and I'll be all tuned in, because those are also the times where the kids like to apologize to us for something they have done.
That's what we want to gear up for.
Yeah. So love that time and just all in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I think that my best piece of advice was not something that was said to me, but something that was modeled for me. And it was a gal that, again, was 10 years ahead of me. And so married 10 years longer, had kids 10 years older than our kids. And she just modeled for me this authenticity of, you got this, it's going to be okay. And I specifically remember coming to her house one day, and we were going to go walk. We walked at Stone Mountain. We would take the loop and just walk that mountain every Saturday. So I went over there one Saturday, and I come inside, and her back's to the refrigerator's back here. Here she is, and she's talking to me. I see her toddler, Maddie, come toddling out, open the fridge, pick that gallon. Like, the gallon of milk was bigger than she was. And she takes it off, and she unscrews it, and she just dumps it onto the floor.
Whoa.
Like, there was no cup. It was just, I'm going to dump some milk out on the floor and just see what happens, you know? And I remember going, do they do that? Kids do that? oh my gosh, this is horrible. And I'm talking and she sees my distress. And so she looks behind me and she goes, oh, she goes, Maddie, don't do that. You know, like, let's turn it up. And she goes, we'll sort that out. She goes, I'll get Lane to clean it up later. We'll clean it. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. She was actually managing me more than she was the situation at that time. But what I learned from her is you got it. You got this. If a mess happens, you'll clean it up. If something goes off the rails, you'll get it back on. You've got this. And so she modeled that in every area for me. So I'm forever grateful for her really great modeling advice of, you're going to be okay. You don't need to stress this.
And that's sometimes awesome. It's just spilled milk or the
don't
thing.
Cry over
yeah,
it.
Don't cry over
don't
it.
Don't freak out over it.
Probably would have been the moments I'm apologizing for, you know, if I experienced that with my kids. No, to be like, what in the world? Okay, I want to know some practical advice. Can I jump in on
yes,
that?
Yes.
Please do. Yes. Someone once told me, like, hey, pantry dinner is what it's called. We went pantry lunch. Pantry dinner is also okay. Where it's, hey, kids, you just go pick out whatever you want. It's just called pantry dinner. Whatever you want, right?
Just do it.
That's just saying.
Yeah.
You have freedom.
Just freedom.
You have freedom to say yes to popcorn.
Popcorn for dinner.
Seriously. There's one thing that we've started this quarantine, right? We have 4 girls in the house. There's lots of laundry all the time. It never ends. There's just clothes everywhere. And they're old enough to start doing some chores, I think. I mean, I could probably compare myself. I could fall into that. And some mom probably has their kids doing all these chores, and mine are like, just, we're still surviving. But it's a trade-off. If you want a bag of popcorn, your own bag of popcorn, you don't have to share with your sisters, you've got to fold a basket of laundry. So if you fold a basket of laundry, you can have a bag of popcorn by yourself without sharing.
Hold on. I owe myself a lot of popcorn.
A lot. 4 kids, 4 things of laundry folded, and all yes. I had to trade them was popcorn.
That's gold.
That's so, smart.
I love that.
Well, you guys heard it from your church. Popcorn for dinner. Perfectly acceptable.
Yes. Do right? it. Yes.
Popcorn milk on
for
the
dinner
floor.
And folded laundry and milk on the floor.
Don't cry.
Don't cry. Don't
Again,
cry
over spilled milk. Low expectations. Adaptable kids.
Resilient.
Resilient too. Kids.
Yes.
So you
and
don't popcorn. Have to apologize to them.
That's right.
And no cooking.
No, oh my goodness.
Okay, you guys are all wrapping up, and it's my job.
That was so helpful. I hope it was helpful for you. One thing we would love to challenge you to do this week is to encourage someone else in your life, especially the moms. Pick up the phone, make a phone call, maybe send an encouraging text, or how about actually write a note and put it in the mail? We think it's really important to encourage the people in our lives. So do that this week. We hope you have a wonderful time today. Happy Mother's Day. Thanks for joining us.